This Jocks 94.5 podcast is brought to you by Millennium Satellite and Video. Log on to msbnow.com. TV excellence everywhere. That's Millennium.
Three Man Front.
I don't know what other analogy you could use, but they are. The Chiefs were just a better team for 60 minutes last night, Cole.
And I think you begin to ask the question, can you even debate whether they're the best team in the NFL right now? And to be able to do what they did to Baltimore, a team that a lot of people would have put in the conversation of who is the best team in the NFL, and that was wild to see. But that offense looked spectacular, especially in the first half. A couple adjustments there in the second half, but whew. Mahomes and company in the first two quarters of that game were lights out.
I mean, they basically could do anything they wanted to, especially in the first half. Anything. I mean, he's dropping dimes. He's running. I mean, it looked like the Baltimore Ravens defense had no clue whatsoever on how they were going to defend him. But to their credit, in the second half, I mean, at one time when they made it a one-score game, I mean, they made it difficult because of the turnover. But, again, I'm with Cole 100%. How anybody would think that is not the best team currently in the NFL, then you're just not paying attention, because Kansas City really showed out last night.
Yeah, the Chiefs on defense, and that's where I was going. Offensively for Baltimore, it was just hard for them to get a rhythm. One of their scores being, you know, the long return there on special teams. I don't think there is any doubt. I think the Chiefs are clearly the best team in football. And you can make an argument for a couple of other teams that would be that next tier, but Kansas City really showing out last night. 3-0 now, Cole, on the season. 2-0 on the road and away from Arrowhead. Pretty impressive.
Yeah, I think you look forward and you look at what this team has in front of them. We talked about that division and how it's going to be a little bit different. Interesting game coming up with New England. If the Raiders can have any healthy receivers in 2 weeks by the time they play them, you know, that could be one that's a little bit of fun. They're still at Buffalo in a couple of weeks. They'll get a few weeks off in the middle of the season when they go Jets and Panthers. But they're at the Dolphins. They got the Falcons. I don't know if they had things figured out in December. But, you know, there's a couple of interesting games. New England, maybe Buffalo. The Raiders a couple of times could be. At the Saints could be. But, you know, I don't look down the schedule and see three or four losses. I just don't. And mainly because of how that offense operates. There's just so many weapons, so many different ways for them to attack. And then Eric Bieniemy just does a fantastic job of, he's almost two steps ahead of knowing to go somewhere else when you're attempting to take away what you believe Patrick Mahomes and company are going to sort of live and die on. And it's, I can't imagine putting together a defensive game plan against that group.
It just doesn't seem fair how they were able to get Elair in the draft. I mean, it's amazing to think how the rich continue to get richer. But for them to get him to go with those other weapons, it's just an amazing thing. And hats off to the way the front office was able to position themselves and get him in the draft.
All right, so the off-the-field news, the Titans, they've closed their facilities. If you haven't heard it, that's the breaking news out of Nashville and the NFL this morning. They've closed their facilities until Saturday, guys. Three players, five teams. Personnel members, they've tested positive for COVID-19. So the eight tests, and this is really, this is going to sound foolish, but a lot of the things that I say are, you almost forget about COVID-19. I know that we're reminded by it, but just from a football sense, the NFL, I haven't really been thinking about COVID-19. No fans in the stands, Cole, but in the mask and the fines that have been levied against coaches. But it was almost like, I don't know, maybe my mindset was getting back to normal, just watching football week in, week out. And then this hits and you're kind of reminded that it's still out there and this is not unlike, and hopefully it's not something we saw with the Miami Marlins early in the Major League Baseball season. But I haven't heard anybody saying shut the NFL down yet.
No, and I think one reason that maybe your mindset is there is because the players and staff members, coaches have done such a good job with COVID-19. Yeah, and had a lot of positive tests, which not being bubbled makes it even that much more impressive. So we haven't had this breakout yet. We haven't had this potential scare yet in the NFL. Now we do. So Yeah, and it's also easy. Like I told you guys, I was on the field before the game talking to Alan Green, Auburn Athletic Director, and he knew I had worked a couple of games, and he kind of came over and said, "What's it been like? Just tell me what it's like. How different has it been?" And I said, "You know, it's been very different. It's been different at other places than places I was before. It'll be different here than it was the previous four places I've been. But once you get two, three series in, you will just become immersed in football. And it's a really nice escape for all of us. And I have been that way in every game that I have done, whether it was St. Paul and the Toros down in South Alabama calling that game at Spanish Fort, where a couple series in, I remember just thinking to myself, I haven't thought about any of this other stuff going on. It's just been football. And it was the same thing in Myrtle Beach. It was the same thing in Memphis. It was the same thing in Ames. It was the same thing in Auburn. And I can imagine that people watching at home or who were lucky enough to go to some of these games, it's the same way for them. We sit around and we've been waiting for this and we've been anticipating it. And we didn't know if we were going to get it. So it's easy, Landrum, to sit back and kind of forget about it. It's easy to sit back and say, and just not let it consume your brain, which is, in my opinion, healthy. Still have to be cognizant of it, but it's extremely healthy and it's great and it's fun. And there have been a lot of times that I have had the exact same mindset that you referenced. It's just, you kind of forget about it. I mean, I've been taking I told you guys 2 days ago or late last week, I was taking my daughter to school and didn't even take my mask. And we were walking to school and I just totally forgot, because hopefully that means we're hitting a curve here. You know, we're making a positive turn, but and I believe that. But I think too, having football brings so much normalcy to so many of us that it's easy to sit back and think, oh man, that's still going on.
Lots of responses. Ben Leard, we just heard him coming in at the number 3 man front on Twitter, Cole. And as always, it's brought to us by
our friends at Royal Buick GMC. The time is now if you're in the market for a new vehicle. Yukon Denali is coming in daily. That's the 2021 model, which if you haven't seen the redone grill on those things, they are beautiful. The 2020 Sierra 1500 Duramax diesel or regular, all in stock, multiple colors, multiple trim levels, smoothest pickup truck I've ever ridden in. Visit them online at royalautomotive.net. Brad Carey tweets in, the bromance with that Cole Kublik, hashtag B. Leard, on that 3-man front was incredible. Emoji laughing face crying. From butt hurting North Korea and Dapper Dan, can't beat the SEC. Sean B. tweets in, Ben Leard equals emoji goat. Jeremy Wilson tweets in, oh no Ben, LOL, Pete hasn't called yet, have they? Emoji laughing face crying, WDE, emoji eagle.
He wasn't talking about kicking a actual dog. He's a pet lover like we are, and dog lover. He's just a Georgia Bulldog.
Lance James tweets in, absolutely love when Ben comes on. Triple exclamation point. His honest disdain for UGA is awesome. 3 more exclamation points. Tony Nunn tweets in, heck yes, Ben Leard gets it. Get him some white and gold. Hashtag THWG. 40 years ago, and you'd think they'd won as many as Bama. Bama Cutter tweets in, Radio Gold. And Daniel tweets in, rock him. And Ben Ledbetter tweets, Ben just moved up to my favorite former Auburn athlete, dot, 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 right next to at Cole Kublik. There's two.
Oh, wow.
Two.
There's two
out there that love me. And Hawk tweets in, probably has something to do with UGA beating Auburn 12 of the last 15 games.
Maybe so. It has been since, as I noted that, 2005, since Auburn won. Between the hedges. But you're one of the few Auburn
think
players.
Ben's disdain goes back to 1996.
Oh, yes.
So plenty before the 12 out of the last 15. I can confirm.
But you're one of the few Auburn players that has experienced a win over Georgia. And also, you guys won over there. What year? Was it 97?
I've never lost in Athens, Georgia, Landrum, so I don't I lose track.
So Tiger Stadium and Sanford Stadium.
Don't know what it's like losing there. Don't know what it's like losing in Tuscaloosa. You can keep going. Just don't go to Starkville. Never won there. Never beat Mississippi State. Think about that.
That's
never
crazy.
Beat State. How weird is that? The 2 years that we went to the SEC championship game, 97 and 2000, we lost the same two teams, Mississippi State and Florida, in the regular season. So, yeah, never beat Mississippi State. But it's a cool place to play. It very similar to to Tuscaloosa and Auburn as far as the stadium layout, where you have the big sort of oval area behind the benches. And, yes, it's that old school. You know, we kind of – there was a couple weeks ago where we were making fun of all the old baseball stadiums, you know, like obviously Busch and Three River Stadium and Riverfront. Now, they were all basically the same stadium. And I kind of feel like that about, like, Auburn – Tuscaloosa and Athens, like whoever, I feel like the same person probably designed and built those stadiums. Like, you get one little minute difference, but like the actual foundational layout of the stadium seems to be almost exactly the same. And the weirdest part about it that I remember going over there is, like, you go in and they have a third deck. You just don't see you don't see a third deck in a football stadium very often. And it's almost like somebody, it's like had a, one of like a couple of those giant military helicopters, and they just lowered another deck down onto there. And say, well, we got to get some more people in here. But the traditions, obviously, are very cool. The fans are fantastic. They got the new video board in there now, which they didn't have when I was there. But, I mean, it's a cool game day experience, man. It really is. It was one of my favorite places to go play because I knew that 20-30% of my teammates, that they wanted to win there more than anywhere else because they were from there. Some of them didn't get offered. Some of them chose not to go. And some of them just grew up hating Georgia, no matter who their family rooted for. So Ben's right. It was heated. I mean, I can tell you about, Richard Seymour trying to eye gouge me after a play. I can tell you about a couple other of my teammates talking about guys went low on them. So it was nasty. And one of the other parts about it was, you know, you can kind of make fun of Georgia for their lack of championships over the last however many years, 40 years. And that's, I mean, listen, it's accurate. So I mean, it's not like people are telling lies. But you could never, and I don't think anyone would ever deny that it feels like in our lifetime, they're one of the most talented teams every year. I mean, I just think about the defense when I was playing. This is back when I played. This was a long time ago. I mean, yeah, Richard Seymour, Marcus Stroud, Champ Bailey, Boss Bailey, Charles Grant. You just had NFL guys all over the place. You had NFL guys everywhere on that defense. And, you know, to be able to go over there and do what we did in 99 was unbelievable.
Coach O talking about getting his team fired up and playing with it in your belly.
It should. It puts a fire in me, I guarantee you that. And we're going to have a fire. And this is a big game for us. And we'll take it one at a time. And we're going to play with some fire. We're going to play with some energy. And that energy was not there for some reason. For some reason or another, it wasn't there. That's up to me to get that done. I'm going to have to take my mask off a little bit more to scream. I felt like I was a little muzzled in my mask there.
I don't know, Coach O. That might not be a good idea. But you really feel bad for that Vanderbilt team and what they're going to be getting, an angry LSU team coming into Nashville, a game that you're going to be a part of, Cole, on Saturday.
Yeah, you say that, but still, I think Vanderbilt's got some real positives to build on. And I mean, don't you now all of a sudden gain a lot more confidence to see that, you know, this team is vulnerable? This team has some weaknesses. This team has some areas that you could potentially go attack, especially downfield with a quarterback, like I said, that I saw on film in Ken Seals that has the ability to do some things. Now listen, he turned it over twice. One, I don't really put on him, but I think he can make some of the throws, and if his offensive line can give him some protection, then I mean I think Vanderbilt could find a way to move the football a little bit defensively. You got some guys up front that can be disruptive. You know, Odengbo was absolutely every bit of the defensive line force you kind of thought he would be in that game. So I mean I think you gain confidence by this. I think if you're LSU, you're kind of looking left and right thinking, how did that just happen? Kind of like what Coach O said, that confidence seems to be gone. And the team didn't come in and play to the really like they thought they could go beat Mississippi State. And so, I don't know. If I'm Vanderbilt, I'm not worried about getting a mad LSU team. I'm happy that we're going to get an LSU team that might be questioning themselves.
Well, one of the things that I took away when we talked to Matt Wyatt earlier, he said that his big observation from this past weekend was it looked like LSU was out of shape, not in the conditioning, didn't have the conditioning that you got from that Mississippi State team, Pat.
Well, who is in shape to defend 60 pass plays? I mean,
Definitely not. But, you know, when you're talking about the Vanderbilt game, the thing that impressed me the most up against Texas A&M was the way that the offense controlled the football. I mean, they held it for 34 minutes. They had success on third down conversions. And, I mean, Cole, when you look at what LSU's bringing back defensively and what Vanderbilt went up against Texas A&M this last week, would you have to say that it was a tougher defense in College Station than what they're going to face this week?
That's tough. I really like the way the A&M defensive line played. I really do. And I think that has a chance to be a really good unit by the end of the season. DeMarvin Leal had a nice game. Bobby Brown did some good things. Jaden Peavy had a really nice game inside. And that was kind of the Michael Clemens that we've been waiting on for 3 years. I mean, he attacked the passer. He was able to win some one-on-ones off the edge, played the run really well. So I think that group can be good. The problem is it's a hard eval right now, Pat, because I just know even if they played hard, that Vanderbilt offensive line is not very talented. They're not great. And so because of that, I have to sort of take a wait-and-see approach. Now, top to bottom, if I'm weighing those two, I don't think I would lean A&M. But I do love their D-line. I think the linebackers played pretty good, and I think the D-line played really good football.
Yeah, well, coming up this weekend, that D-line, they're going to have a little bit more of a test than they had last Saturday in College Station as they take on Alabama. Alabama, a 17-point favorite over Texas A&M. And I know you can't dwell on one game, but based on what we see, what we saw or what we didn't see Saturday, there in College Station, you knew that they had a deficiency at the wide receiver position with Osman and some of those other cats that either transferred or went on to the NFL. And you didn't have that much experience. The only thing that you felt really good about, besides Kellen Mond, if you felt good about Kellen Mond, was the running back position. I just didn't see a whole lot of promise in that one game. And I know it's one game, Pat, but I didn't see a whole lot of promise with Texas A&M.
Well, the biggest complaint that, I mean, I saw on social media and the people that cover this Texas A&M football team, and Cole did an interview this morning with Tex Ag, so he might have obviously a better point of view of what they're thinking right now, but it's the untimely penalties and the turnovers, all these things that they've been – every year you hear they're going to clean this up and they're going to be more disciplined. And that just was not there the other night against Vanderbilt. Now, it was the first game of the season. So from week one to week two, some of those things might be tightened up. But, Cole, what was Tex Ag's opinion in regards to after game one of the things that they need to do to improve?
I think wanted to see more of the offense. And even though you lost a couple of guys you're going to rely on, you knew you still had – some players back that could help you be explosive, whether it was Isaiah Spiller, whether it was Jaden Weidemeyer, even a Caleb Chapman. I mean, guys who they knew in that offense would have an opportunity to flourish and could still be playmakers. And just, I think it was consistency, really. And Vanderbilt did a lot. Ted Roof did a good job sort of moving guys around, some of the run stunts and some of the different looks that he gave them. I think it confused that Texas A&M offense a little bit. So, again, full speed, you can practice a twist, you can practice a run stunt, a blitz, but then all of a sudden you get in that first game and things are happening fast, and none of these teams are having that acclimation period to get back to what full speed SEC football is. It's what makes Alabama's win so much more impressive to me, is that I don't know if I've seen three different teams, maybe two. I mean, I think Clemson and Alabama are the only two teams that I've seen that have played football in their openers that it looked like they had played five or six games. That just not a ton of mistakes, not a ton of drops, not a ton of missed tackles, not a ton of busted assignments, and then the execution was at a pretty high level, both offensively and defensively. That was my takeaway from Alabama, and it was about the opposite with Texas A&M. Going to be a lot of youngsters that are, I think, going to take a bite out of SEC opponents this season. It was kind of cool going back through all the games the last day or two to see some that we knew, some that we expected, and maybe some others that we didn't really anticipate were going to be able to have a big year as a freshman or redshirt freshman, a newcomer, so to speak, in the SEC. We've mentioned a lot about J.J. Pegues, the Auburn tight end, 6'2", 300, how he's got soft hands. He can kind of move around a little bit and showed some nice power down on the goal line. Darnell Washington, the big 6'7", 260-pound Georgia tight end. I really liked what I saw from Donovan Kaufman, safety at Vanderbilt. And also, you know, a guy that hadn't gotten a ton of discussion on the show, Ken Seals, the Vanderbilt quarterback. Now, it's a new system under Coach Fitch that I think fits his skill set extremely well. They did a nice job mixing sort of the zone scheme in with the runs. But, I mean, he's a guy that looked like he had a lot of moxie. He's a guy that looked to me like he had some confidence. And I think he has a bright future as an SEC quarterback. There's not a lot of focus on him and how he played right now. But I think he could be one of those guys. Eric Gilbert, the number one overall tight end from last year, of course at LSU, was going to make some plays. I think we all knew that. And we had heard through camp that Will Anderson at Alabama was going to be somebody that was going to give them a legit pass rush. Physically just did not look like a freshman. 31 running around for that Alabama defense. Looked pretty good to me. I thought Reese McIntyre, a guard at Ole Miss, that's a redshirt freshman, playing left guard for them, 56, had a really nice day. And Ben Brown at center, he's not a young kid, but I thought he had a good game. The middle of that Ole Miss offensive line maybe did some things that were a little better than some people anticipated. But it's always cool to see some of the young guys, fellas, especially the ones that we didn't necessarily expect or anticipate, that are going to be able to have an impact on certain teams this season.
Do you think that this is possibly a higher class of freshmen that will be making these impacts this year, or about on path with what we've seen in the years past?
Well, I think some teams are just going to have it. Whether you had opt-outs, guys leave for the draft, whether you have a player or two that's down. And keep in mind, Pat, some of these freshmen may have just gotten opportunities because other players couldn't practice.
Yeah.
And then they had to be relied on. Now, I don't think that's the case for a Will Anderson or an Eric Gilbert. I mean, those guys were the top of their class coming in. I mean, they were highly recruited players. So I think they're ones that you look at and say, yeah, we anticipated they would make an impact right away. But like Connor Basilick at Missouri, I think he's someone who could really help that team down the road and really be a guy that does some nice things in Missouri. It might not even be this year. They might let Sean Robinson ride this year out and maybe take advantage of his mobility. And listen, Robinson threw some nice balls for Missouri, but mm-hmm. I just from what I saw from Basilick, I think he is someone who they might be able to build the offense around for the next few seasons.
Well, it was interesting just the aspect of getting these opportunities because no one had spring ball. You had a lot of guys that came on campus early or tried to get on campus if they graduated back in December. And so then getting into the fall and having an opportunity because someone possibly tested positive for COVID or somebody went down early in camp. So these guys are taking their opportunities, Landrum, to be able to step up and be an impact to their football team.
Yeah, and we had more, I think, it seemed like maybe more high-profile guys just because of where we are last year in the state of Alabama. And like, even George Pickens, I mean, we focused on him being that new guy who was going to replace that receiving core for the Georgia Bulldogs, and everybody obviously pointed to George Pickens being an instrumental part of that offense. Bo Nix playing as a freshman, some of the other guys, even Jerrion Ealy there at Ole Miss. I think maybe that got lost a little bit because some of these guys that you mentioned, Cole, to your average SEC fans, they're flying under the radar. Like when you told us on Friday before you did the game there with Auburn and Kentucky this past weekend, the J.J. Pegues, I'll be honest with you, that totally flew under my radar and knowing who this kid was, this you know, 6'2", 300-pound Wildcat, can play defensive tackle, he's a tight end, you know, can fly down the field on kick cover. It just kind of get lost, and I think you might not have some of those high-profile guys right now in the SEC that we had last year.
Yeah, I think, too, you look at – I mean, let's look at Auburn. We mentioned Pegues, but, I mean, Jalen Simpson was the freshman of the week, and I hadn't really mentioned his name just yet. He was one that sort of popped out when that depth chart was released and was going to get the start. Of course, a redshirt freshman that, you know, he goes out and has a really nice game against Kentucky and just another guy that adds more athleticism and more playmaking ability to that Auburn secondary. You know, I told you guys, Jermaine Burton, wide receiver at Georgia, did some really nice things. I thought Charles Cross at Mississippi State, the left side of the Mississippi State offensive line's got some nasty to him. And that's weird to say because they're going to throw the ball 60 times a game. But, like, they'll get after you. That part of that offensive line, I'm not 100% sold on the right side yet, but the left side is solid, and they will fight you, and they're going to be fun to watch as the season goes on. So there's a lot of young guys that are going to get opportunities, and it's for a lot of different reasons right now. But, I mean, the cool part about it is none of them are burning a year of eligibility either, and they're getting to play SEC football.
You know, you were just talking about the Mississippi State game. We'll talk to Matt Wyatt about that a little bit later. Just saw some numbers a few minutes ago. The game peaked at 6 million viewers on CBS and around an average of about 4.5 million. So if anybody wanted to question whether America or the Deep South wanted to see college football, I mean, there's the prime example. I mean, I know that it was the Pirates' first game in the SEC. You had the defending national champions, LSU, but to draw that kind of number, guys, I mean, that is very impressive, and that bodes well for what you're going to have for the rest of the season, because it seems like each and every week, especially on this new SEC conference schedule, I mean, the ratings are going to be through the roof.
Yeah, definitely. And it's when you get that kind of offense with the style that they run, that's going to be viewer-friendly. People are going to tune in, and people who didn't maybe catch them last week, you're going to get those eyes on those television sets for Mississippi State games. But wouldn't it just be so fitting that Arkansas, they get their first win in however many games, and Mississippi State gets knocked off by Sam Pittman this upcoming week? We're going to talk to Matt Wyatt about that a little bit later on. Mike Leach, though, I was referencing the press conference that he had. You never know what's going to come out of his mouth. Here's Mike Leach talking about cardboard cutouts.
I have to be honest, I haven't quite gotten the hang of the cutout people in the stands, you know. I mean, that's an episode of Twilight Zone. Some of you guys are probably all too young for Twilight Zone, but I mean the black and white Twilight Zone where Rod Sterling would get on there with the really creepy voice in the suit, and then all of a sudden, you know, is this real? Is it out of space? Is it, you know, it was almost like, you know, haunted houses met science fiction, that show. And then now all of a sudden we have these people frozen in time sitting there in this stadium with enthusiastic expressions on their face, but they can't move. And then yet the noise. So I don't know. I mean, I, for one, I don't know if it's cool and people enjoy it, great. But that is a little surreal, the fake people in the stand.
All right, so I want to ask you, I was thinking about this yesterday. With Mississippi State's performance in week one, I don't know how many people saw that coming, what we actually got with KJ Costello going for over 600 yards. I knew that they would put up numbers. You guys did too with that air raid offense. But sustainability. What is the sustainability of this? I want to go schematically here too, Cole. If you're a coach, you're scouting right now, you got your GA doing this scout, and you're looking at what Mississippi State does, can they continue with that kind of success week in, week out in the SEC with the defenses they're going to be playing?
Not week in, week out, no. But they can do it a lot of the time. I think they can do it most of the time. And they may still put up similar numbers, but it's not going to necessarily mean they're going to win. You know, one thing that we hadn't really talked a lot about is their defense, which they're going to have to find a way to get stopped at some point. And then you're going to have teams who schematically, based on what they can do on offense, are going to be able to essentially force stops for Washington State's offense. If you can control the clock and minimize their possessions and force them to be a little bit different with how they want to manage things, then that's obviously going to put them in a bad spot. And then I think too, you're going to get in a situation where teams defensively are going to figure out ways to either play a little more high risk or maybe sit back a little bit more and force them to do things they're not comfortable with, take a guy away, different pressure packages that can be effective. There are going to be more things that pop up that teams in this league are going to be able to find success doing, whether that's in coverage, whether it's looks, whether it's pressures, whether it's one-on-ones. There are good enough athletes on the majority of these rosters that you're going to be able to find ways to cause problems for them. But again, I go back to what I said yesterday. This is not all about what Mississippi State does. It's about what they make you do. And if you allow their offense to dictate who you are in a game, they got a good chance of beating you because all they got to do is execute at that point. And if they execute 70% of what they're trying to do, they're probably going to score more points than you are. So it's a game that you have to do a really good job of understanding who you are and what team you are and sort of what the team goals are in that game. And I would imagine that emotionally, it's going to be difficult for a lot of coaches to deal with because you're going to give up big plays. You're going to give up passes. You're going to give up completions and yards. But you just got to stay within yourself, stay within your game plan, stay within what you are defensively. And that's hard. That's hard for a lot of teams to think that. That's one thing we talked to Mark Stoops about the other day. And he just said, I stress to my defense sometimes, it's okay to give up yards every now and then. You can't try to get a pick on every play. You can't play press man with no help over the top on every play. You can't come up and attack every single run, you know, 1,000 miles an hour downhill. Sometimes you got to force a run to bounce outside and let somebody else make the play. Sometimes you come up and you play the edge. You set the edge. You force the run to cut back inside, and somebody else has got to be there to make a play. That's why team football is such a great sport. But this will be more about who Mississippi State makes their opponents be than necessarily what they are, in my opinion.
Yeah, because if you go back, Pat, to the Pac-12, just when you thought that you had Washington State figured out and they're putting up huge numbers every single game, they would have that 17, 20-point output versus like a Cal in the middle of the season.
Mm-hmm.
One of the better defensive teams. So that will be interesting.
Go back last year to like the
– in his return to Baton Rouge.
Go back to last year to like the Apple Cup. I mean, and what Washington was able – to do, you know, defensively. Now, I'm with you, Lance. I mean, there were times in the Pac-12, I mean, it's a fantastic system, but it's not unstoppable. I mean, because if it was unstoppable, Washington State would have been playing in the Rose Bowl every year. So there's going to be ways in which teams are going to be able to defend it. But like Cole said, I mean, if you let Mississippi State dictate those terms to you and you go outside your norm as a defense, then you're going to be susceptible to that.
I quickly wanted to ask you guys this, though. Do you feel like Looney Tunes is a bit of a cheat because it's so almost many. Like 11 cartoons in one?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's not one specific one.
No. No. You can't just go Looney Tunes.
All right. Brian Brenton tweets in, speaking of cartoons, who remembers Pro Stars in the 90s? Only lasted one season. It was like Bo and Gretzky and Jordan cartoon guys. I don't remember what they did.
But didn't, like, the beginning of the at the beginning, wasn't it was actually Wayne and Bo, and then they transformed into like, the cartoon stars? Or the card, like, they did it for the open?
I don't remember like, it that well.
I'm trying to remember.
Brandon Williams tweets in, the SEC, where our dreams live and yours die. Damian Mitchell tweets in at the number 3-man front, when you stay ready, you ain't got to get ready.
Ooh.
Well, he would license that out to the SEC? That's big of Damian.
He may be able to pull down some coin for that. Sir Mascalot tweets, Beavis and Butthead? ? List is BS. And TJ tweets in, I missed the beginning of the animal talk on Pat Ponders, but it led me down the road of asking my boss what she reckons the largest animal she could cling wrap to a lamppost is. First off, the fact that you use reckons is a win.
Are we talking light pole or are we talking lamp post?
I think it's got to be light pole. I mean, lamp post.
That'd be a pretty small animal.
That
right?
Actually would probably be more complicated, I guess, because it's going to move around the entire time.
Yeah, you get
more difficult.
The question is, are you going to get the animal to cooperate while you cling wrap? You going cling wrap? You going what's the new stuff? Is it what came after the saran wrap that they have out now? It's a different kind of
wrap. Tin foil?
No. You know what I'm talking
Tupperware?
About.
Tupperware?
Just forget it.
Greg Ray tweets, backyard animal giraffe. See, the problem with that is then everybody's walking by looking at it and they're getting free views.
Yeah, you're looking for try to charge people.
Yeah, you have to build a green monster around your backyard. If that was the case.
But think about I don't recommend that you get on your roof, but just think about some of the advantages if you did have a giraffe. Wouldn't need a ladder.
Steven Beard tweets in, SEC, the only conference that matters, period. Not the punctuation he actually spelled out, period. Keith Pitt says, update on John Chavis, love your show, go Dogs. Report, Chavis hired to coach middle school football in Tennessee. That's from wholehogsports.com.
Wow.
Wow.
Some said that he's been coaching middle school football for the last few years in the SEC.
Wow.
The way his defense has got torched.
He wasn't getting paid like a middle school coach, though.
No.
Brian Minter tweets in, do you think we could ever get Ben and Aaron Murray in the same room?
Oh, that would.
I don't think Ben has anything personal against Aaron Murray.
No. Now, could we get Aaron Murray and Nick Fairley in the same room?
Mm. Well, Aaron shared with us at Media Days a few years ago that that's still brings back bad memories. He's probably not going to want to. He's not going to want to go there. Glenn Opper tweets in, Bullwinkle and Rocky, Bugs Bunny, and Foghorn, I declare.
Hmm.
Foghorn Leghorn. What are some other cartoons that we're missing here? Because I feel like there are, I mean, no Thundercats in there. What else are we missing out on that probably should have been in there? Because I kind of agree that the... The list feels a little weird.
Feels kind of weighted towards the older ones.
Probably not for our demographic.
See, I feel like it was a little
Care Bears.
Weighted. I felt like, John, it was a little weighted too much towards TV cartoons. Like, I kind of don't view The Simpsons as a cartoon. Yeah, it's animated, but I don't think that's a cartoon. Like, for me, my brain will probably always view cartoons as like Saturday morning.
See, that's I'm with you there.
But I put Family Guy on my list because if we're going there and we're allowing those in, then yeah, that's going to make it.
Okay, here's the top 10 again, according to TV Guide. Simpsons, Flintstones, Looney Tunes, Peanuts, Scooby-Doo, Rocky Bullwinkle, Batman, the 1992 animated series, SpongeBob, Family Guy, and South Park. That was your top 10.
Like no Jetsons?
Number
no
five.
Popeye?
Mighty Mouse? Mighty
no
Mouse?
Popeye. No Mighty Mouse. No Heckle and Jekyll.
Man, Pink Panther?
Yeah.
All right. I
Garfield?
Feel like,
Winnie the Pooh was on that list, right?
Too,
was Winnie the Pooh on there?
No.
I don't think so. No.
Hmm. I feel like maybe they need to kind of reevaluate that list.
It's not a great list. The fact that Tom and Jerry's not even in the top 10, I'm out. Alvin and the Chipmunks sitting in there?
Nope.
No.
Three Man Front. Weekdays 10 till 2 on Jocks 94.5, JocksFM.com, and the Jocks mobile app.